Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
Hello and welcome to the show tonight. What a beautiful day it's been here in Boulder, Colorado. It seems like an endless stream of summer days, even this late in the year. I so appreciate seeing the beauty of nature every day. We've got an exciting show tonight. It's exciting because we're talking about my most favorite subject, our human potential. So often the mythology of our past or the religions or the stories talk about unity. The Father and I are one, the kingdom of heaven is within, and those ideas are just ideas unless we can actually bring them into a tangible form. And that's what I really enjoy talking about, is tapping our human potential. And tonight we're going to talk about tapping that human potential to create a future for ourselves, a future that is safe, and a future we can trust, and a future that is vibrant and whole and fulfilling and exciting and passionate and fun. Because all these variables exist within our human potential. If we look at the storyline that a very small faction of society is showing us today, you would think that the idea of a wonderful future is too far out of reach. But our human nature is playing out on many, many, many different fronts. There's many different paradigms. There's many different arenas of life expanding. When we talk about human potential, we're talking about the expansion of human consciousness. Human consciousness doesn't always expand. Oftentimes it contracts into fear and separation and doubt. And there's a very small portion of the many faces of humanity that tells a story of gloom and despair for what is possible. And it's like having three wishes and not trusting that they'll come true. It's like to believe the media is to not understand the immense and powerful potential that every single one of us holds. So tonight we're going to talk about tapping our human potential, and we're going to approach it from two different points of view. One is a personal point of view, and one is a collective point of view. And the two are very much related. Our collective experience, our collective consciousness, if you will, is made up of all these individual consciousnesses, like you and me. Every human being has a point of presence in the collective consciousness. So in order for us to genuinely have a future that is safe and trustworthy, so we can relax, we need to bring our collective consciousness and our subconscious with us. You can put on a rose-colored glasses and say that everything's fine, but if in truth you have deep-seated fears and unresolved emotional torment going on within yourself, you're not going to really have a genuine sense of safety or a sense of peace. So let's break these down. Let's look at it personally first, and we'll start there. It's funny because on Facebook I'll watch these very brilliant people who've gone through the academic arena and gone up to the top and reached PhD or whatever level that they've aspired to. And I like to ask them in their college training and education, how many classes did they have about ideas, honoring the value of an idea, how to capture new ideas, how to create a space within your own consciousness that is literally a landing pad of new ideas? Because all change in our human experience starts off with an idea. They're always the game changer. So when we look at our human experience from a personal point of view, so often we tend to experience a pretty consistent experience over our life. In other words, if we were to hand out 1,000 blank pieces of paper to 1,000 people and say, well, can you know, just generally write out how you experience life. Is it easy? Is it hard? Is it safe? Is it dangerous? Is it fun? Is it a burden? And these 1,000 people were to journal sincerely their experience of their life, they would be documenting what it is like to live life with their own personal karma. So let's talk about this karma for a minute, because karma is a very powerful aspect for ourselves personally and both and also collectively. What the hell is this karma? That's another question I like to ask academia. And they say, well, I think that was touched in religious sciences. And that's like the mob teaching economics. What your karma is an energetic component of who you are now. Well, okay, you're sitting here listening to the radio show and you feel pretty good, and so you go to feel this karma and there's nothing that's really registering. Nothing's really coming up on the radar screen. And the reason for that is our karma exists in our subconscious. It's below the radar. Our karma is the unresolved energy that is stored in our subconscious. And karma it's not really an obvious thing in the sense that somebody's wearing a red shirt or a green shirt or a blue shirt. That stands out pretty quick, and everybody would pretty much agree on what's what. Karma doesn't particularly show itself that way. You can see the effect of karma if you observe society. So we send our men off to war. My dad went to World War II and he fought in the Pacific. And I look at pictures of him over his lifetime. And you can hand me a picture and I'll tell you in a heartbeat which side of the war it was on. Because before the war, he's this happy as can be farm kid with probably a fishing pole in his hand and some mischief in his head. And after the war, he's got this scowl on his face, this taintedness. And, you know, as a kid, I'd be really kind of naive, and I'd say, Dad, tell us about the war. Dad, tell us about the war. And for the most part, he would avoid any discussion of actual battle. He would tell us times of when they would be goofing off or something like that. And occasionally, he just once or twice, he would drop into this deep, deep, deep sorrow. Very, very heavy, heavy sorrow. And that heavy sorrow existed in his psyche the whole time. And that's what I'm talking about, our subconscious. When we have unresolved aspects of our life, unresolved energetic imprints of our life, that exists below the radar. If my dad was here now, he has passed. If he was here now and I said, well, Dad, how do you feel? Oh, I feel pretty good. Because he's not feeling that deep sorrow. So you have karma. I have karma. It exists in our subconscious. And our karma is a real game changer when it comes to making change in our life. And to understand the nature of this personal karma, when you truly understand the nature of this personal karma, you will start to see it behind every single choice you make during the day. That's right. It is actually motivating the choices you make during your day in a subconscious, off-the-radar way. That's why people tend to have a very consistent life experience. If we were to gather up those 1,000 sheets of paper and everybody's sincerely sharing how they're experiencing life, and then shuffle them up and hand them back out, and as you read them, you hand them to somebody else and you trade them and you read more and more, you'd be reading these examples of human experience and you're like, what planet do you live on? I don't have any of this. I can't relate to this experience. And the reason why we each have our own unique set of experiences and attitudes and beliefs and feelings about things is because of our karmic imprinting in our subconscious. How can we be powerful people? How can we be powerful people? And what I mean by powerful is taking our human potential and being able to convert it into change, into effect in our everyday life. Because if we can't bring an effect from what we know, then what we know is just mental gyrations. There's no intrinsic value to it unless we can bring it into effect. So as you'd look over these 1,000 different experiences of what it is to be human, every single description would be describing the nature of life with that particular karmic signature. Whoever wrote the paragraph had a karmic signature in their subconscious, and that motivates a very persistent life experience. Sometimes you'll hear people say, well, I've married the same type of person 3 times now. Every one of them was a jerk. Well, it's not about them. Your subconscious literally attracts to you life teachers. The scallywags, the tyrants, the difficult people in your life are your teachers. And every single one of them have a huge gift for you. Because every person that can get you upset is showing you an aspect of your karma that you have not resolved. So when we talk about being powerful by tapping our human potential, understanding how our karma affects us on a day in and day out basis is paramount to our ability to genuinely make change. So I couldn't really talk about our human power or our human potential without touching on karma. There's a lot more to karma, and the better you understand karma, the more you empower yourself to understand the nature of your life. So I'm going to move on to the idea of ideas. The idea of ideas. Wow. Ideas are the gateway of change. Human consciousness, that's you right now, that's me right now. Human consciousness is the most powerful substance on the planet, period. Forever. Well, there's nuclear power. Well, yeah, okay, how did that come about? Oh, somebody figured it out. Oh, that was human consciousness figuring it out. Right. Well, there's this and there's that. Well, how did that come about? It came about through human consciousness. And the turning point to every single creation, invention, proclamation, creed, constitution, agreement, comes from human consciousness. So when you understand the power of human consciousness, to observe the nature of how we handle ideas. So when you went to college, they taught ideas every single year, right? But that was mandatory. You had to take classes every year about how to embody new ideas and how to understand the value of new ideas and what to do with new ideas. Just to touch briefly on the idea of the power of ideas, I'm going to take a very simple idea and show you how some people took a very simple idea and what they did with it. And I think you might be surprised. So here in college, here in Boulder, we have a college up on the hill, CU Boulder. And I was up there the other day walking across campus, and there's all these students. If you take a first year, maybe second year computer science student and give them an assignment for homework and say, I want you to make a web page where I can upload a video and I can enter metadata about it and I can log off and then I can come back or anybody else can come back and search based on that metadata and then play the video back. That's easily an entry-level assignment in college. It's a very simple idea. It's a very simple idea. But it's also an extremely powerful idea. And that's what I mean by being taught how to understand the value of an idea. So often, you'll have an idea and you'll discount it as being simple. So let's take this example farther. So these people took this simple concept, make a web page where you can upload video, type in some metadata, and come back, search, and play back. And they took $220 million of somebody else's money, and they wrapped it around that simple idea as marketing. And a year later, they sold it for $1.2 billion. A simple idea. A simple idea. That's why I'm saying we were never really genuinely taught to see the immense power behind recognizing the value of an idea. So to recognize the value, to capture the idea, and then to embody the idea is the framework of tapping your human potential. So here we are, we're human beings, and we go about our day and we have these subconscious motivations and we want to experience life in a fun and rewarding way. Perhaps every one of us has some aspect of our life that we want to change, that we want to improve, that we want to expand on. If we're experiencing a pattern or a propensity in our human experience, the chances are very high we have a karmic imprint or a karmic energetic component that's perpetuating that experience. It's the nature of karma. To capture an idea is oftentimes to capture the idea that exists outside of where we live every day. In other words, in our mental capacity, in our mental imagination, in our mental lucidness, what kind of ideas can we capture? The power of the imagination should be college-level classes. And there should be advanced imagination. There should be stretching our mental lucidness, our ability to be lucid to completely new ideas so we can capture them. You know, it's a curious thing because in truth, we're all a soul having a human experience. Every one of us has a soul component to us. Our soul has no idea about fear, and our soul has no idea about limitation. And our heart is a very intelligent aspect of ourselves. Our heart and our soul are the 1-2 punch of showing up in a powerful way. The heart organ is often placed in second when it comes to handling thoughts and ideas. We put the brain first, the mind first. And once you get some experience with your heart, you'll see the incongruency with that. If you want some alternate input on that, Google Steve Jobs quotes heart and see how many times he referenced his heart in how he lived his life. So when we look about embodying new ideas, it's important that we consider our heart and our soul. And why would that be? Why am I talking about a heart and soul? If I'm talking about ideas, shouldn't I be talking about the mind? Well, yeah, we'll get to the mind later. The mind, it eventually has to get to the mind, but it won't start in the mind typically. It comes in through the heart and the soul. When you have a desire or a prayer or an intention for a change, always, always, every time, always the answer comes. But if you can't embody the answer, you won't experience it. If you can't take the idea of the answer and capture it in your mind due to narrow thinking, due to mental patterning, due to stringent belief systems, then the prayer, the answer, has no place to land. In order for us to embody ideas into our everyday life, we have to capture them, and then we have to understand their value, and then we have to honor those ideas. If we dilute and pollute the ideas, the power of the idea wanes, it fades, it diminishes. So if we're truly going to talk about tapping our human potential, we're going to be talking about how do we handle our ideas. So here you are listening to this radio show. How many ideas have you had over the past 5 years or 10 years or 15 years? Is there ideas that have been rattling around in your head for 20 years? Start a business, write a book, write a play, whatever. Our heart and our soul will talk to us infinitum, ongoing, hoping that these ideas will catch and will bring them into our human experience. There's no value in our soul reaching over our shoulders and wiping away our struggles, wiping away our difficulties, and just handing us the already fulfilled future. That's not how it works. Our soul's not going to remove anything from our journey that, because everything in our journey is there for us to see and understand as a reflection of ourselves. So when we talk about the heart and the soul bringing in new ideas, you know, the idea of having an infinite well of ideas is mind-boggling. There's a class right there. Your heart and your soul are feeding you ideas that are literally stepping stones. If you were to sit down and journal about the ideas that have been fed to you by your heart and your soul now, those are stepping stones. Say you got your karma cleaned out, you understood the value of the ideas you have written down, and you proceed to fulfill them. New improved ideas would show up in your head, in your heart and your soul. New ideas would show up. Life is an ever-expanding experience. Human consciousness, human potential is ever-expanding, and there's not an end to it. There's always another now, and now, and now, that we can have a completely new thought, that we can start in a completely new direction. We can turn the page and start a new chapter in our life, now, or now, or now, forever. There's no end to this. And when you really get that and learn how to capture ideas and bring them into fulfillment, then a quickening happens. And that's when life gets really juicy, when you start fulfilling the ideas in a shorter and shorter temporal amount of time. So let's look at how ideas come in. So your heart and your soul knows everything about you. They know about how much money you have, how much time you have, what you enjoy to do, what you don't enjoy to do, what would really improve your life, what would show you some of your karma. Your heart and your soul knows everything there is to know about you. And the reason I bring this up is because when you get inspiration from your heart and your soul, you don't have to rationalize it with your mind. So let's go through a scenario about how I did show up with your heart and your soul. So I very much suggest on a daily basis you talk to your heart and your soul. Talk to them flat out. Hey, heart, hey, soul, what the hell? So here we are, planet Earth. This is day 5,000 or whatever. And I want to get my act together. I want to learn how to master bringing my potential into effect in my life. I want to learn how to be more powerful with the ideas that I have. I want to respect and honor my potential to and learn how to bring it into effect in my everyday life. When you set that intention, that's like a prayer, that's like a request, that's like a, you know, help me out here. And what will happen is, oftentimes we get our inspiration when our mind is busy. We're unloading the groceries from the car. We're in the shower. We're looking through the drawer for something. Our mind is distracted. And then in that moment, a single sentence will slip into our thoughts. Why don't you go back to school? Why don't you start that play? Why don't you take a writing class? And what typically happens is the very next thought, we bring it up into our heads. And when we bring it up into our heads, our ego starts to rationalize it.
You can't do that. We don't have time for that. There's no way. You're so tired at the end of the day. What will people think?
So what was that original idea? It's gone. Your mind took it and started rationalizing it. What your ego does when it makes decisions is it compares things with the past. It compares choices with the past. Your ego tends to protect, not release, not heal, not cure, but protect and guard the unresolved energy in your karma. That's right. And so when a new idea comes where the outcome is not known, your ego will tend to be motivated to avoid it. Your ego likes choices where it knows what the outcome is going to be. It's like throwing socks into a spinning ceiling fan. The sock being the idea from your heart and the ceiling fan being your ego, there's no chance in hell for it to stick. When our minds are so busy and we're so critical of ourselves, oh my God, critical of ourselves. When we're so critical of ourselves, there's no place for an idea to land in our mind. So what the hell? What do we do with that? Well, there's a very simple thing, and it will change your life if you actually do it. This is so simple, so simple. Get a post-it note. Get a pad of sticky paper. And when that idea comes up, put a pad in your car, put one by your nightstand, maybe one in the kitchen, put them all over the place, and put a pen nearby. And you'll be going through your day, and sure enough, you're looking through your sock drawer, and an idea will come in your head. Why don't you take music lessons? And when you can discern that the idea has come from your heart and your soul, write that sucker down verbatim, exactly how you heard it, because your heart and your soul crafted the sentence specifically for you. So you pick up the post-it note and you write it down. All of a sudden, your brain can go into a rational shitstorm and the original idea is preserved. When we just came out of that echo chamber, was the original idea anywhere in your head? By writing it down, it automatically gets captured. But another really cool thing happens. When you write it down and you pick it up and you look at it, your brain, your ego, reads it. And something completely different happens when you read it than when it stays in thought. When you read it, it can actually be absorbed, or it can actually land in your thoughts. It's much more likely to stick around if you write it down. If you want your ideas to stick around, write them down. So when you start doing this, you're going to start seeing repetitive ideas show up over and over again. You're going to see an underlying theme. That's because your heart and your soul had an idea for your life before you were even born. Your heart and your soul have an idea for your future right now that is exquisite and magnificent and expanding and fun exactly the way you like it. Not anybody else on the planet, you. Your heart and your soul are here for you. They're the writer, producer, and director of the most epic story of life on Earth, and that's your life. In order for it to be an authentic journey for you, it has to be custom written for you. And that's what your ideas from your heart and your soul are. So when you write down these ideas, some of these ideas are going to be really big. I grew up in a small town. I grew up in, you know, pretty much farm country, and my heart, my soul are showing me ideas that have nothing to do with my life up to this point. It's like, Les, there's a game change coming along, and you're going to do stuff you never comprehended. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Les, come on now. They're not kidding. And if I can show up for these ideas, there will certainly be a path for them to come about. And I'm doing it. I'm here on the radio show. I'm writing my fourth book. I'm getting a video production set up. I'm very passionate about human potential and how it can be brought about to change our condition, to change our experience. And I'm here to help you discover that same thing, because we're all very powerful people. So when you write down that idea, to actually bring it into existence is to embody the new idea. And this is where coming into alignment with your subconscious. In other words, any energy in your subconscious that would have come up in that paragraph, any thoughts, beliefs, feelings, emotions that are incongruent with this new idea that exists in your own subconscious needs to get cleaned out. Those are memories of your past. Those are imprints of your past. You're an infinite being. You're an endless well of inspiration. And if your karma is incongruent with the new ideas, the two will buck each other, and you won't see an effect as far as bringing it into your experience. So to embody the new idea is to bring your personal energy persona into alignment with the vibration of the idea. Your karma is, we could talk about karma for four or five radio shows, but your karma is typically lower frequency energy, because we're coming out of darkness. And when you bring in a high energy, a high vibration idea, your karma literally dilutes and pollutes the idea, typically through rationalizing and critical thinking and low self-esteem and low belief in yourself and no self-love, things like that. And when you get those cleaned out and you empower yourself and you feel worthy and entitled and deserving, and there's nothing incongruent in your karma or subconscious, then the universe only has one choice, and that's to mirror it back to you. The universe is the mirror of your energy, and it reflects both your conscious and subconscious energy back to you. If you're experiencing a repetitive pattern, that's your subconscious energy being consistently mirrored back to you. So when we talk about these ideas, you need to embody them to bring them into effect. But to write them down on these post-it notes and then spend time thinking about them is a very big step. Most people don't even get that far. If you go talk to them, there's no new ideas coming into their experience. There's no ideas that they're bringing into fruition. And I want to say one other thing about ideas before we move on to a collective experience. Because when you have an idea, there's so many ways for it to come about. When you have an idea from your heart or soul, there's an infinite variety of ways that the idea can be brought about into manifestation. And in that example that I used with the making a web page, and that example is the YouTube brand. That was the creation of YouTube. When I talked about investors there, I want to touch on investors a little bit, because a lot of times when we're brought up, we're not told about the opportunities or the mechanics of how things can work. If somebody has a lot of money and they want to leverage it for value, they become investors. You don't have to put your farm up or your home as collateral on a loan to get your business going. You can spend other people's money to bring your idea about. When you have an idea, the original idea, at that point, it's got the highest risk because it only exists in your mind. You can take that idea and leverage it for value, for cash in your pocket value. When you get an investor to invest in your idea, they are leveraging money against the value of your idea. And the way it works is there's a fundamental risk involved with investors, because not all ideas come into fruition. I mean, just watch Shark Tanks or something like that. There's a method for it to come about. So investors are taking a risk, but they're taking the financial risk with their money. When they buy into an idea, they're risking their money. You as the inventor, as the CEO, are there to honor the value of the idea, protect the value of the idea, progress the value of the idea, and you're not taking the risk of the finances, of the capital, as much as the investors are, because the investors understand that they can lose that money. That's why it's called an investment. It may or may not have returns. But when you first have that idea, the risk is the highest. So you invent a way to convert electricity out of pop cans or whatever. And when you have this idea and it's in your head, that's the highest risk. And so if it's the highest risk, there'd be a minimal amount of investment. In other words, if you were to offer stocks, there wouldn't be a lot of value to the stocks because it would be high risk. But if you were to sit down, write a business plan around it, make a prototype of it, and then log the results of tests, you're creating value out of thin air. You're creating value out of thin air by documenting your idea. Now, you can go back to the exact same investors, and the risk isn't as high, and you can get more value for the stocks. I don't want to even begin to start talking about business at this point. For some reason, I felt like I should mention it. I easily defer you to CEO Space, CEO space with Bernie Dorman, a wonderful man. I've met him personally several times. All he wants is for you to succeed, and he'll teach you how to do it in a very compassionate and uplifting way. CEO space changed my life. It cleaned my clock about what was possible in business ventures. In other words, how to honor the value of an idea, how to bring the value of an idea into effect. I strongly recommend CEO space as a place to educate yourself in a very short period of time. They have these seminars 5 times a year. And those are the places where it cracks you open to what's possible. The first time I went, it was like drinking from a fire hydrant. There was so much information. I turned around and went again the very next time. And then I could wrap my head around the business of business, the business of converting the value of an idea into effect. So if you're an inventor, if you have a screenplay, if you have any idea that has value behind it, and in your heart and your soul is showing you an immensely big picture of it, it might be time to bring in the business aspect of what to do with an idea to honor your own human potential. So let's move along to our collective potential. You know, if you were... when you get on Facebook or social media and you read all the different threads, it seems like we're all living these different storylines. We all have these different value systems. We all have these different belief systems. And it's hard to imagine what would turn our collective around. Our collective consciousness is this kind of like unified momentum of the overall average of our subconscious or the overall average of our karma. Just like those pictures from my dad, much of our society, millions of people have gone to war. Millions of people have gone through depressions and famines and the struggle of our human nature on this planet has been an extremely painful and sorrowful experience. Our subconscious has been loaded up to the hilt with unresolved karma. When you see a homeless person or a vet that's come back from war or somebody who can't get their life together, they're so loaded up to the hilt in their subconscious that their feelings overwhelm them and they don't have any extra horsepower to capture ideas. They're just breaking even to get through their day. I remember there's a particular panhandler, and I rolled down my window and I gave him some money, and his skin was like almost a dark purple and he was shaking and he had a tough time speaking. He was trying to get through this minute and the next minute and the next minute. He couldn't capture an idea if he wanted to. He was so loaded to the hilt with so much karmic sorrow and grief in his persona, it was tough for him to get through the day. When, you know, in society, if you take a step back and look, you can see the wake of karma. The idea of our collective karma is easiest to observe when you look at the general nature of our human condition of our human story. There's people on the very edge of life that are barely making it. Every part of their life is a struggle. They're overwhelmed day in and day out. They're fatigued. It's very difficult for them to get through the day. Then there's a tier or two up where they have a little more energy, but they don't really embrace new ideas. They've quit thinking about the future, and they're just doing this baseline repetitive action to keep their life going. And there's no sense of expansion or joy or the idea that a new condition can exist in their life. And then there's a little farther up. And this is the scale of human consciousness. We could talk about the general terms all the way up to beings of unconditional love. Love is an extremely powerful aspect of our human potential. And love can transcend any of our conditions. So when we look at the collective, we're a society that has been deeply scarred with our karma. We've been deeply scarred with collective experiences, with world wars and recessions of the 1930s and 2008. When our collective is so emotionally laden, so emotionally loaded up, you can get away with most anything if you keep people in an emotionally reactive state. You know, the other day we were talking about 9/11, and there's this video of World Trade Center 7 building falling. There's two planes, but three buildings fell. So here I am watching this video out of the blue, and this building's just falling. It's obviously being demolished. And I'm like, I don't remember a single moment where there was where that was taken to court and the perpetrators caught and sentenced. It never happened. A building in New York City was dropped, like a vacant building, except there were people in it, and nothing happened. Nothing happened. That's an example of being so karmically laden, so emotionally reactive to our everyday environment that we literally don't pay attention. So when we talk about our collective potential, the most powerful thing you can do to help the collective is to clean your karma out of your subconscious and raise your human consciousness. So you jotted down a paragraph describing your life. In that example, you're literally documenting what it's like to have that karmic signature in your subconscious. Most of the people in our society tend to have a very repetitive, consistent attitude and mindset towards the nature of life. But in order for us to bring new ideas in and embody them collectively, there needs to be a place for them to land in our human consciousness collectively. And that place can be you. When you clean out your karma, you're not only changing your own personal life and you're getting more resilient where events don't overwhelm you for days at a time. As you raise your consciousness, the amount of emotional impact any event has gets shorter and shorter. When you're very heavily karmically laden, an emotional event can affect you for a week. As you resolve the emotion out of your subconscious, that might come down to 4 or 5 days. As you work on yourself even more, that gets to be a few days. As you keep working on cleaning out your subconscious, that can be a few hours. And if you really work on it, the emotional event will be like hitting a speed bump in the road and you go right back to where you were. When we write down ideas on post-it notes, what you're going to find out is those ideas are going to take a back seat when you get some event in your life that overwhelms you. Maybe the water pipe breaks, or maybe the in-laws stop by, or maybe the house floods and you have to go live in a hotel for a few days. When you have these events, whatever was not essential, and new ideas tend to get pushed to the back, whatever's not essential gets dropped. And oftentimes we never get back to it. So to help the collective, the most powerful thing you can do is to clean your own subconscious out, to raise your own human consciousness. As you clean out the energy in your subconscious, not only does it as a, it has a very profound effect on your ability to influence your life for change, your ability to embody new ideas, your ability to recover from reactions quicker, your ability to have more control of how you're experiencing your life. And when you do that personally, you're changing the collective. When every time there's a huge event in our nation, we have a collective reaction to it. And sometimes the reaction takes a very long time. But the sooner people recover from any event and come back to an awareness of consciousness, the more a new idea can be entertained. We vote for the future by what our thoughts are on now. Part of the reason why the media keeps replaying these fear stories, what they do is they play out fear scenarios on TV to keep you in a state of emotional reaction. When you drop into a reaction, you create the same results. The repetitive nature of reacting always generates the same results. So in order for people to have sway over the collective is to keep the collective in an emotionally reactive state. So if you go to a basketball game and you're sitting in the crowd and here's the team playing and you're just a few rows up and there's people all around you and, you know, maybe the guy next to you is a little bit of a smartass and he's hollering at the players, you know, come on, get your game on. And the player's a little frustrated that he's missed a few shots and he's hearing this tyrant in the crowd hollering at him and he's not sure who's doing it. He just keeps hearing it. Maybe the guy's sitting next to you. So you're watching the game and they're playing along and he comes out and he misses another shot and as he's running away, the guy next to you yells, you know, come on, what is this? And he heckles the ball player. Well, what the hell? So this goes on for a little while and pretty soon there he goes, he misses another shot and the guy heckles one more time. And the basketball player turns around and he gives out a general statement to whoever that asshole is and he belts out this wave of anger. Why don't you mind your own business? And he's emoting, he's releasing energy from his persona. So he belts out this angry shout. As it leaves his body, it is an impersonal emotional wave of energy. Every single wave of energy that comes in your persona is impersonal. So here comes this wave of anger, and there's the guy next to you, and there's you, and there's the people you've come with, and here comes this wave of anger. Well, this anger comes into our personal energy space and it stirs up our subconscious. So here comes a wave of impersonal anger and it comes into your being. And if you have unresolved anger or unresolved fear or unresolved doubt in your psyche, this external wave of emotional energy will come into your psyche and upset you. When you become, quote, upset, unquote, the upsetness is your own energy. That's energy in your subconscious that is being upset, and thus you feel emotionally upset. That's your own personal karma getting stirred up. Well, it turns out those events are real gifts because they're bringing subconscious energy into a conscious space. It's never, ever about the energy coming into your persona. It's always about your reaction to that energy that creates the same results. And we're experiencing this collectively over and over every day. When you open up the web browser and you read some story of fear, if you drop into fear, you're dropping into a reaction. You're literally shifting your energy in that moment from a place of creation. You're no longer embracing new ideas in that moment. You're having an emotional reaction to what might happen based on the fear that you're experiencing. Our future is created collectively based on the overall total of our feelings and thoughts of every moment. The longer you stay in an emotional reaction in a fear, the more you're voting for a fearful future. The future is sculpted by our energetic collective. That's why I say the most powerful thing you can do to help the collective is to clean out your own subconscious. So when that wave of energy comes into your psyche, there's nothing unresolved within you, and it moves through you like poop through a goose. It goes straight through you like light through a plane of glass. When you get clear in your subconscious, nothing can get you upset and you're genuinely free. Nothing can get you upset and you're genuinely free. But that only comes when you honestly and sincerely clean out your subconscious. You clean out your karma. You know, humanity has an immensely powerful future in front of it. I envision prosperity, a genuine sense of safety and trust of every single person on the planet. Every single one of us feels safe and we trust the process of life. We've collectively released our fear of life, and we're fulfilling an ever-flowing stream of ideas from within ourselves to into creation in our everyday experience, where we're passionately engaged in what makes us feel fulfilled. Every single one of us has a different passion, a different story, a different gift. And when we all honor that genuine inspiration from within our own being, from within our own heart and our soul, we feel fulfilled. We feel satisfied. We feel genuinely happy and joyful. Well, that's heaven on earth. We can have heaven on earth. We have the human potential to create a future that is full of safety and trust and joy and prosperity and clean air and clean water and food that's delicious and nurturing, to exchange our passion with each other, to share our passionate expression of who we are. That's an exciting life. That's a fulfilling life. That's a rewarding life. And that exists in our potential now. When you choose it for yourself, you're also choosing it for humanity. When you clean out your subconscious and you start fulfilling the ideas of your heart and your soul, you're living your own personal heaven on earth. And when we do that collectively, we have created a better future for humanity. Never lose trust in humanity. We always have another chapter within us. We are the most powerful substance on the planet, and I'm talking about you. Trust life, live life, enjoy life. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Why don't you follow us on New Human Living Radio and go to newhumanliving.com and sign up and learn how to bring your passions into effect. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.
This has been a New Human Living Radio broadcast. You can raise your own personal power with Personal Power Fundamentals Home Study Course at newhumanliving.com. Thanks for listening.